Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, Joyce Carol Oates with her new novel based on the Tawana Brawley incident of the 1980s. Why Brawley? Why now? We'll ask Joyce Carol Oates. And we'll have a public health expert to take your calls on the measles vaccine. And we'll survey the field of presidential hopefuls on the issue of mandatory vaccination. Chris Christie, for example, changed his position in the middle of this week. But first, the terrible tragedy at the Metro North Crossing in Valhalla is a reminder of how dangerous it can be in general where trains crisscross with roads. And while these crossings are becoming statistically safer, we'll tell you how much so, the number of accidents is still shockingly high, and the number in our area hasn't gone down as steadily as in the rest of the country. Here with me now to talk about how these crossings work and how they might be safer is Augustine Ubaldi, a railroad engineering expert at the company Robson Forensic. Hi, Augustine. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
This tragedy has obviously brought to light that accidents like this are actually really common. CBS News reported that last year in the United States, there were more than 2,000 accidents at highway rail crossings, and over 200 people were killed. Are those the numbers you have?
I haven't checked them recently, but I wouldn't usually they're available online through the FRA, the Federal Railroad Administration, and they sound accurate.
Why is this still so common?
There are some crossings out there that perhaps need better protection, but I think a lot of it comes down to the driver and the driver attitude toward grade crossings. In this particular crossing, in this incident, I saw a news report where I think because of the work they were doing, some gates were down, but no trains were coming, and drivers were simply driving around the gates without even slowing down or considering that there might be a train coming. And that's just dangerous.
Well, that would indicate, though, to me, that maybe there's an engineering fix to some of this. If that can happen, if there are 200 accidents or so a year, if those statistics that I saw and heard are accurate, and if what you describe is the way that this most commonly happens, I imagine as public health people, as engineering people, we don't want to just simply write it off to the driver and say, oh, those people made mistakes. That person blew it, did what she shouldn't have been doing, as opposed to look at systemic fixes that in those what must be really very tense situations. If somebody's making a mistake like this driver apparently made of the SUV, then, you know, of course, these are high tension, high fear, fraught circumstances, that maybe there's something we can do to reduce the number of times that this happens. What do you think?
That's certainly possible. There are situations where they go to four quadrant gates so that you can't drive around the gate. It just isn't possible. There is a location out in Mystic, Connecticut, on the Northeast Corridor where the Acela trains are running at, 150 miles an hour, where there are actually loops placed in the crossing that will send a signal down the road to the train to slow the train down if somebody gets stuck on the crossing. But a crossing like that, and it's a fairly simple crossing, is like $2 million. Each crossing has to be addressed for the exposure, the risk, and offset against the cost. I'm not saying that somebody who loses their life at a crossing is negligible, but there is no absolute safety. You have to try and make the most reasonable choices to achieve a better outcome.
And here is Governor Cuomo saying something similar about the prohibitive cost to Pat Kiernan on New York One this week.
In theory, it's a nice idea, Pat. In practicality, do we have the money? Do we have the time? And is it one of the top priority safety projects? I would say no.
So, listeners, do you have questions for our guest on how train crossings are designed or anything about railroad crossing safety? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. If you want to share a story of what you think is a dangerous train crossing and ask how its safety might be improved, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. I'll tell you a story in a minute of a time that that I had kind of a close call. But I understand that the number of accidents has gone down really significantly. Again, I saw this in the CBS News report where the number was in the last few decades an 85% reduction, and I'm not sure whether that was in accidents or in fatalities, but does that sound about right to you?
Yes, it does. Keep in mind, over the last few decades, there have been a three steps that have been taken. One, where we used to have passive crossing, simply the little X that said railroad crossing, where you had to stop and look down the track to see if a train has been coming, they have been replaced and upgraded with systems such as this, with flashing lights and gates, so that you don't have to look for the train. The lights are going to tell you. That's number one.
And
number
two, let me jump in and say that that's what happened to me, and it was a few decades ago when I was working at a little radio station outside Albany that was up this kind of rural hill that included, a freight train crossing. And that's all there was. I had to stop each time and look both ways. And frankly, at that particular location, the view was kind of obscured by trees. And, you know, I did the best I could each time to kind of crane my neck and look around and make sure there was no train coming. And one time as I did that and after I did that and was crossing the tracks, I looked to my right, and there was a train a little bit uncomfortably close. And I, you know, safely made it across. But I was like, "Whoa, that was a little shaking."
Yeah,
are you telling me that the law has changed so that crossings like that, and I haven't been to that spot in a long time, crossings like that would now have been upgraded and changed under the law universally?
It isn't so much the law as there are guidelines that say under certain circumstances. For example, if you couldn't had trouble seeing down the track to see if a train was coming, your sight distance was compromised. What the regulation, not the regulations, but what the guidelines say, you know, for good safe practice, is a crossing like that then should have what we call active protection, flashing lights and gates, because since you can't see if a train is coming, you then look to the electronic system to tell you that a train is coming.
Uh-huh.
The second step that I was going to say that has happened is that money has been put in across the country to grade separate, to basically put the railroad track and the road at different levels instead of at the same level. And the third, and I'll talk about how that might apply to this particular intersection, third thing has been a program called Operation Lifesaver, and it is a combination of safety organizations and railroads. It's a nonprofit organization that, through education, tries to prevent injuries and accidents and fatalities on and about railroad tracks and at grade crossings. And it goes out, and there's some railroads that have a rolling road show that goes through town to provide safety presentations to remind people about the dangers of grade crossings. Now, as far as grade crossing separation, this goes back to what the governor was saying. If you were to raise Commerce Street over the railroad tracks, you have to start, in order for cars to be able to manage it, you have to start a little further back, a little further west, so that by the time you get to the tracks, you are at the proper elevation for the trains to clear underneath. Then you have to get back down. But right on the other side, you have the intersection with the Conic State Parkway. Now, you may not have enough room. I haven't looked at it. And they would have to do a feasibility study. There may not be enough room for the cars to safely get back down to ground level across Taconic State Parkway. So now you would have to extend it over the parkway. Now you no longer have an interchange. You can't get off Commerce Street onto the parkway. So those are the kinds of things. Sometimes it's not always possible to grade separate. And so what you try to do is provide sufficient warning, a reasonable and timely warning to the drivers that a train is coming. On the other hand, drivers have a duty to provide ordinary care and diligence to make sure that a train is coming or not. So those are the things. There are situations where the driver's not at fault that I have worked on, and others where lights are flashing, gates are down. Just last night, there was an accident not too far away from me. Lights were flashing, gates were down, train was actually in the crossing, and a car went through the gates, smacked into the side of the train that was in the crossing, and while it was there, was hit by a train coming the other direction on the other track.
And how did that happen?
I don't know. It just happened. I just heard the news this morning. It happened late last night, west of Cleveland, but the train was in the crossing. Whether the driver had a heart attack or don't know.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying here's a situation. The train's there. The gates are down. The lights are flashing, and a car goes right on through.
Anyway. Zoe in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Zoe.
Yes, I think some people don't encounter these railroad crossings often, and they'd be confused. Why aren't there traffic signals to accompany the railroad warnings? A regular traffic signal might, be something that people would respond to more easily.
What do you think?
I don't know. It may confuse people more. You look at what people do when you get an amber light. It could very well be that this is something that has been passed down for so many years that it's considered that this is what people recognize. The standards for grade crossing protection and signage and stuff is mandated by the Manual of Uniform Traffic Control Devices, which is pretty much used nationwide. In fact, New York State has adopted that as the standard for all the signs. That's why all the stop signs are the same across the United States. I remember years ago they used to be different. As a kid, I go, I like that old sign. Why did they change that?
You could see your point from a kind of common sense standpoint, right? If you have an ordinary red light, green, yellow, red, and when the gates go down or when the train is coming, you have a red light that looks like any other red light.
That is a point. Again, it goes back to are people not paying attention to if they see a flashing red light and they don't stop, would they stop for a traffic signal?
Especially in
this case where you've got that traffic signal just on the other side on the parkway. They're going to be seeing that.
Yeah.
I've had that happen to me sometimes. You have two traffic signals very close, and I'm looking at the far one, and I almost missed the closer one.
There's an intersection near me where you have a green light and a stop sign at the same time, but that's another show. Anderson in White Plains, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anderson.
Hi. My point is that I find this amazing that in the United States, 2015, we actually have this kind of situation that's still going on. We have amazing solutions for all kinds of problems in all areas, science, engineering. There's got to be, for example, embassies all over the world, including the United States, they have the steel gates that lower into the ground, and they raise so no vehicles can actually go through. So it's basically impossible.
Right, and I'm going to leave it. I'm going to cut you off because our guest has to leave in a minute. So without actually making a trestle, at every crossing, some kind of gate that comes up, gate that comes down, as if I guess it was, one of those whatever you call them, those bridges that go up and down by boat crossings. So what about that and anything else you want to say in our last minute?
Okay. Well, first of all, in this particular instance, that would not have made a difference because she was on the other side of it. Secondly, you have to weigh that against the risk of this thing comes up. How quickly does it come up? Where is the car when it comes up? You know, those barriers at embassies are there to keep somebody out. Can you imagine what would happen if it comes up and someone doesn't stop in time and they run into it, or it comes up just as they're going over it,
right,
or comes down on them?
Right. If it's a drawbridge, is the word I was trying to think of before. If that
goes
up just as somebody has accidentally snuck through and is on the tracks, then there's no way for them to get out. Well, all right. I think we've established the imperfection of the array of possible fixes here, and yet this does shine a light on the fact that this happens thousands of times a year in this country with hundreds of fatalities, and so it would seem something that's not been in the public eye is here now, and we should revisit it and take a look at seeing what we could do about it. So I want to thank our guest, Augustine Ubaldi, a railroad engineering expert at Robeson Forensic. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we'll have a public health expert next to take your calls on the measles vaccine, and we'll survey the field of presidential hopefuls on the issue of mandatory vaccination. Chris Christie changing his position in the middle of this week, for example. Stay with us.